Okay, on the handout it says workshop description. Am I prepared to teach school? Where do I start? What is the most important? If you feel like a hippo or elephant that has been dropped into the ocean, this class will give you some techniques and strategies to help you keep your head above water. So as an introduction, what do you think? Which animal can swim? A hippo or an elephant? Go ahead and write down what you think it is. Or is it maybe both? Or maybe neither? So you can write down hippo, elephant, both, or neither. Which animal do you think can swim? All right. The answer is the elephant. A hippo actually can't swim. At least that's what the internet says, so it must be true. They can float. They can walk on the bottom, even run or gallop on the bottom, but they can't swim. I never realized that. Elephants, on the other hand, are excellent swimmers. Unfortunately for this illustration, elephants do not have to learn how to swim. Most animals don't have to learn how to swim, but people do. And we have to learn how to teach as well. We aren't do very well at teaching without learning how. Teaching is a skill that must be learned. And ideally, a teacher should have or work under an experienced teacher for a year before diving off on his own. But unfortunately, most of you were or will be pushed off the deep end of the pool. And hopefully you'll have had time to prepare to take this plunge. Number one, the importance of preparation. Preparation is so important. It says in this book, page 94, the three most important words to a painter, pilot, or chef are preparation, preparation, preparation. The three most important words to a teacher are preparation, preparation, preparation. Extremely important. Imagine trying to eat this banana. Does anyone want to volunteer to take a big bite out of this banana without doing any preparation to it first? It would probably taste, you probably wouldn't like bananas very well. But with just a little bit of preparation, it can become a very tasty treat. And in some ways, that's a lot of the way school is as well. A little bit of preparation can go a long way in helping you have a more enjoyable experience teaching. If you do not prepare to teach, you are preparing to fail, basically. You must prepare to be successful, or you are preparing to fail. A, under the importance of preparation, it saves you time. And you might think, well, I just don't have time to prepare my lessons. You don't have time not to prepare. It takes more time not to prepare. You might save a little bit of time beforehand, but you're going to end up spending a lot more time after class with checking papers and fixing mistakes, and maybe the next day you'll have to go back over it and reteach it. It takes way longer to teach it wrong the first time. If you're confused when you're teaching your lesson, your students are definitely going to be confused. And you end up in a trap where you end up, you know, spending the next day going over the previous day's work. It's a bad circle to get into. The second one, B, it promotes a higher standard of teaching. It just makes common sense. If you prepare, your teaching will be better. How important is teaching anyway? Ben Carson is a famous brain surgeon. And one day, he separated a pair of Siamese twins who were joined at the head from birth. And he and his team spent 5 months planning and working through every contingency they could imagine. They even worked out exactly where each member of the 70-person team would stand in the operating room. Every person had a place to stand in that operating room. Very detailed planning. They had a 10-page book that just detailed every step in the process. They spent five separate 3-hour dress rehearsals where they went through and practiced with using two life-size dolls attached at the heads by Velcro. And they practiced doing this operation. It was a very important operation. And they prepared for it. And it was successful. Do we take our students as serious? In a sense, you are operating on their brains, you know. You're messing with their brains. And you're impacting them for life. The third thing, see, it is a good example for your students. It's a good example for your students. You need to tell them, y'all need to study for this test coming up on Friday. Make sure you study. Don't wait till the last minute to do it. and they see, oh, they come into the schoolroom one morning and you're there frantically trying to find, paging through the Bible, trying to find a good chapter to read for devotions that morning. They notice things like that. And G, it helps prevent burnout. No one enjoys feeling like a failure. And that's exactly how you'll feel if you don't prepare. You'll feel like a failure. Preparation is essential to being a successful teacher. All right, now, how can we prepare? The first one of that, number two, is prepare in prayer. Prayer is the most important way to prepare for teaching. Do you feel unqualified to teach school? I hope you do. Because you're not qualified. None of us are qualified to do this great job that we've been given to do. That feeling of inadequacy should drive us to our knees every single day in prayer. We heard that already today. We know, ask God every day before you enter the classroom. Ask God for wisdom. In the Seven Laws of the Learner, I don't have it with me, but Bruce Wilkinson says there, teachers impact more by their character and commitment than by their communication. Teachers impact more by their character and commitment than by their communication. It's not so much in what you say. It's who you are. And as was mentioned earlier, children, they pick up very fast on how committed you are to teaching school. You know, are you just there for 1 year? Are you just there for short term? Or do you, you know, are you, why are you teaching? Are you teaching because of the huge paycheck you're getting? They pick up on stuff like that. You impact more by your character and commitment than by your communication. 2 Corinthians 12:9-10 says, where Paul was asking God to remove his thorn in the flesh, and God told him, he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength, God's strength, is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I glory in mine infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong. When we are weak, that is when God can use us. If you go into teaching this year and you think, I got this under control, I can handle it. Maybe there's a group of rowdy students, you know, that just couldn't behave last year and the school board hired you to come in, and yeah, I'll show those rowdy guys who's the boss. You're going to get surprised because they have a lot more energy than you do. When Jehoshaphat was king, a great army came up against him. And here is his plea. O our God, wilt thou not judge them? For we have no might against this great company that cometh against us. Neither know we what to do, but our eyes are upon thee. That's in 2 Chronicles 20, verse 12. That's why being at the end of ourselves is so important, because that's when we turn to God for help. And we shouldn't just wait until we're at the end of our road to turn to God. We should ask God for wisdom before then. But especially then, it's when we turn to God for help. When we're at the end of the day, we're at our wit's end. We don't know what to do with that student that always fails his spelling words, or the student that always has homework or doesn't get his homework done. That's when we need to turn to God, and not only then, but all the time. In Zechariah, an angel appeared to him. The people were very discouraged about finishing the temple. And an angel appeared to him and said, this is the word of the Lord unto Zerubbabel, saying, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. That's how things get done. It's not by might. It's not by our might, not by our power, not by our experience or knowledge or all the stuff we learned at WFTI. It's through God's spirit. Is how the battles are won. God being with you. Number three is know your expectations. What are you expecting from your students? Maybe you heard that these students, they are just really, really poor learners. They're really struggling. I mean, hey, if you can just get them to pass their test, then you'll be doing good. And so that's what you're aiming for, is just to get them to pass their test. That's probably about what they'll do, what you expected of them. There's a story, I wanted to read it, but again, our luggage is somewhere in Portland.
I have the book.
You have the book. Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much.
I didn't
Oh, my. The resources were right there. I just failed to look for them. Okay, let me read you a story. The Law of Expectations. I stood like a rock in a rushing stream of preoccupied Bible college students. It was fall registration, organized chaos. I'd seen it all before many times, but this time, instead of racing around the gymnasium signing up for classes, I watched as students signed up for my classes. It was my first year out of graduate school, and I was just hours away from my debut on the other side of the lectern. Taking a closer look at several of the registration tables, I noticed that I'd been assigned sections 1, 2, and 3 of the course called Bible Study Methods. The remaining 5 sections were taught by others. After walking around for 20 minutes, I left the gym and headed across the campus towards my office. A well-seasoned faculty member at the college caught up with me and said, "I just can't believe it." "You can't believe what?" "They gave you section 2, didn't they?" "Well, yes, I guess they did." He shook his head in seeming unbelief. "I just can't believe it. You're the new faculty member, first-year rookie, and they gave you section 2? He had me perplexed. "Why? What's so special about section 2? "You mean they didn't tell you at faculty orientation?" The truth was, I was the only new faculty member that year, so they didn't have a faculty orientation. I asked him to explain it to me. "Section 2 has all the top high school seniors coming into the freshman class. The honors group, cream of the crop, the most outstanding group of students in the whole college." We stopped outside the faculty office and he leveled his gaze at me. "Bruce, you're not going to believe the difference teaching Section 2. "What do you mean?" I asked, not knowing whether to feel exhilarated or intimidated. Growing up, I'd never been in Section 2, I didn't think. "Motivation, like a team of wild horses straining at the reins. Those kids will just pull it out of you. You're going to love every minute of it. Wow, first-year teacher, I just can't believe the luck." He walked down the sidewalk, shaking his head. I was intrigued, to say the least. The next day, Section 1 filed in, and we had a good hour. Nothing outstanding, just a good give-and-take session with a solid group of young men and women. After break, Section 2 walked in. I couldn't believe it. He was absolutely right. I could feel the electricity in the air. From the ring of the bell, class just flew by as the teacher and students learned at almost warp speed. It was like stepping on a surfboard and riding the crest of the wave the entire hour. At times, the class's interest and desire to learn swept over me with such intensity that I had trouble staying on top of it. Everything seemed different. Their questions, their eye contact, their facial expressions, even the way they sat in their chairs. It was incredible. My colleague was right. These students pull the best right out of you. Section 3 came in later that day, and I realized in only a few seconds they were just like Section 1. Good, but nowhere near the caliber of Section 2. As the semester progressed, I found myself increasingly grateful to God for leading me into the ministry of teaching. I never felt so challenged and fulfilled, and though I enjoyed all of my classes, Section 2 always made my day. As we neared midterms, I found myself walking to a faculty meeting with the academic dean, Dr. Joseph Wong. "Well, Bruce," he said, "you're at the halfway point of your first year. The honeymoon is over by now. How do you enjoy teaching college?"
"It's absolutely terrific. It's better than I ever imagined."
He smiled. "That's great to hear. What's your favorite part of teaching?" Without thinking, I blurted out, "Section 2! He raised his eyebrows and stopped walking in order to listen more intently, I thought. "You have Section 2? Tell me about it." It was the first chance I had to express my delight and gratitude for the opportunity to teach 30 of the keenest students I had ever encountered. I must have sung their praise for a couple minutes as I described the amazing difference between them and the rest of the classes. The dean looked thoughtful as I went on and on about this gifted group of young men and women. When I had finished, he said, "I'm glad you're having so much success, Bruce, but I need to tell you something that may surprise you. We have no honors class this year. We canceled it." My mouth went dry.
"Joe," I said, "you've got to be kidding."
"No, I'm not kidding. Last year we decided it would be better if we spread the top students throughout all the classes. We thought it would add a little more spark to each of the sections." Dizzy with disbelief, I said,
"Joe, I'll catch you in a few minutes. I need to go back to my office for a moment."
I raced into my office and dialed the register, sure that my colleague was trying to pull something over this rookie.
"Joyce," I said, "I've got Section 2 of Bible Study Methods, right?"
"That's right, Bruce."
I swallowed hard.
"And Joyce, Section 2 contains all the outstanding students, the top freshmen, right?"
"Well, no, Bruce. We canceled that program last year."
Groaning inwardly, I thanked her and hung up the phone.
I couldn't seem to come to grips with what was happening. With reluctance, I reached for my grade book and opened it. I compared the grades of Section 1 and 3 with Section 2. The difference was staggering. I pulled a stack of ungraded papers off my bookshelf. Stacking Sections 1 and 3 on top of the other, I compared that pile with the stack from Section 2 by itself. The Section 2 had more pages than the other two sections combined. I went through the papers one by one, page by page, and the difference was dramatic. The Section 2 students outshone their peers again and again. That day proved to be one of the most dramatic learning experiences of my life. I've never quite gotten over it. For the first time, I realized that what I believed about my students made an incredible difference in what they learned in my class. You see, there was no real difference between Section 1 and Section 2. The same students, the same content, the same day of the week. Not one difference. In fact, never once did I say, your Section 2 and your performance should reflect it. Then how could I explain such a dramatic difference in what these students learned? The only difference was in the teacher's expectations. Because my expectations were higher for Section 2, so was their behavior and learning. I'll never forget sitting back in my chair and saying to myself, I wonder what would have happened if that faculty member had told me the outstanding students were in Section 3. That experience locks forever in my memory the reality of the law of expectation. My expectations undeniably have a tremendous impact on the lives of my students, both for good and not for good. He's reading there. Number 4, know your students. I taught my first 4 years at home at my home church in Dixon, Tennessee, and I had 2 years off in which I moved to Texas and got married. Then I taught 4 years there. So I've always had the advantage of knowing my students ahead of time. How many of you are moving to a community where you don't really know your students? Okay, wow. So you got a job on your hands. It's going to be more work. That's one of your jobs, is to know your students. Jonathan Erb, some of these thoughts that I have come from him. He had that experience quite a few times. Some things you need to do. A, study their records. You should be able to find a file cabinet somewhere in the school with their grades and things like that, achievement test scores. Study their records. See how they've been doing in school. Maybe there's a certain area that they've struggled with. Maybe you can come up with a plan to help them in that area so you catch it ahead of time. That's one way to prepare. Start a relationship with them now. This is B. Start a relationship. Send them a postcard. There's lots of postcards around here in Oregon. You could probably find one at a gas station or something. Just pick one out, or 10 of them out, or 15, however many students you have, and just send them a postcard. Say, hey Billy, this is Mr. Derek from WFTI. I'm here at WFTI right now preparing for school. Looking forward to seeing you there. Love, teacher, or something like that. Just a little thing can start that relationship now. They'll get that, maybe get them excited about school. C, make a scrapbook. I've never actually done this, again, but I know teachers that have. Make a scrapbook with maybe a picture, especially if you don't know your students by name. Have a picture for each page and write their name at the top with their picture. Write their hobbies or whatever information you know about them on that page. And then study that until you can say their names from memory. When I went to music camp, one of my music teachers was Wendell Nisley, and the very first day we were there, first class we were in, he spent a considerable amount of time learning everyone's name. And that just so impressed me. And it made me feel special that he took the time, he thought it was important, to learn my name. And if you know your students' names from the very first day of school, it shows them you care about them. And that will mean something to them if you know their names before you get there. You shouldn't, and I'm not even sure how long this should be, but if you don't know their names on the first day, it shouldn't go long at all that you don't know their names. Otherwise, you might run into trouble. Show them that you care. It's just a little thing you can do, and you can do this ahead of time. The fifth one is know your school. Every school is different, and the school you're teaching might be very different than the one that you grew up in. So figure out what their school is, what they do. Number A is school culture, what they do and how they do it. Every school has a culture, and you can't just come in there and just change everything. That comes after years of teaching. You can change little by little, but when you come in, you should stick with the culture that they have. How do they do recess? Do they all play together, or do they play separately as classes? Do they meet certain days of the week for assembly? Do they meet for devotion several times a week? How do they do singing? What are the procedures for recess time? Find out what your school culture is. How do the students feel about learning, even? Different things like that. B is school structure, then. There's different types of school structure. Some schools are patron-sponsored, and some schools are church-sponsored. Who's the principal? Who's the chairman? Who's going to be the head teacher? Are you going to be the head teacher? Make sure you find that out before you enter your first day of school. The chairman that calls you and asks you to teach, they don't always give a lot of details on the first phone call, and you don't even know what to ask sometimes. So find out some of those things. Number six is my favorite one. Know your curriculum. I guess I'm just maybe OCD in this, but that's not one of my favorite things to do, is walking in the classroom at the beginning of the year, and I go to my books. I have, you know, somewhere in your school there should be boxes of books sitting around. If the guy, the previous teacher or chairman or secretary or whoever was in charge did their job, there should be a bunch of books somewhere. And just to open those up and look through the books and stack them and organize them, write their names on the chalkboard or something, and then in front of each student's name, put a stack of their books, the books they're going to be doing that year. And that's an easy way to familiarize yourself with the curriculum. And even if it's a good way to catch if there's something missing. Sometimes the one that orders the books makes mistakes. And if you stack them all out, the textbook and the teacher's guide and the reader and each of the light units or whatever you need, then you'll know if there's anything missing. So if you do that first when you get there, then you'll have time for the order to come in. Because if you just do that the day before school starts, it probably won't be able to make it the next day in time for school to start. So do that right away. That's the first thing you should do, is go through the books. Study the textbook. With Rod and staff curriculum, you need to do more planning. You know, you need to do more review. One thing with Rod and staff textbooks is you need to figure out how much you need to do throughout the year to get it finished in the year. So count the chapters in the book, or count the number of pages and figure out, okay, I need to do this many pages. How many tests are there? Figure those in. Figure out how long it will take you to finish the book. Or maybe you need to talk to the previous teacher and see, did they finish the textbook? Maybe they didn't. Maybe they go just through half the textbook in one year and half the next year. I don't know. But find that stuff out. Read the teacher's guide. That's been said already. Please read the teacher's guide. There's so much information in there that we often miss because we just didn't take time to read it. And I'm at fault there as well. We missed that information. Where it says, to the teacher, that's for you to read. Number seven is know your schedule. And this is a hard one for us sometimes. Know your schedule. A is personal life. In your personal life, go to bed on time. That's probably the hardest one to do, right? You know, we have so many activities and so many things we want to do, and especially youth, you've got lots of energy. You only need about 3 hours of sleep every night, right? And sometimes you have youth, you know, maybe you have youth activities on Friday night or whatever night it is, and you're up late doing that. And then, of course, you still have a bunch of work to do at school, and so, you know, maybe you go the next day or whatever the case is. Go to bed on time. You do need your sleep. You have to prioritize what is important. Number two, be careful with other commitments. Teachers are talented people, okay? Each one of you are talented people. I'm not saying anything about anybody else, but teachers are talented people. And so sometimes you get asked to do other jobs as well. Maybe a Sunday school teacher, or a song leader, or a choir director, or there's a host of other things you might get asked for to help with. Know what you have time for. Don't commit to doing too many things that you don't have time to do. Or even maybe it's helping part-time at a mini-barn shop in the evenings in your spare time. Is that a good idea? Or to have another job going, you know, to help supplement the meager income, you know, so we have another job or something. But be careful with other commitments. Teaching is a full-time job, and even if you may not have many students, it still takes a lot of time to prepare. No, be careful with other commitments. School life, B, get a copy of last year's schedule. Making a schedule, and when I mean a schedule, I'm talking about this little square or rectangular thing that shows
the time, with time school starts to the time school lets out, what is happening every minute for each day of the week. Very likely, the teacher before you had a schedule. And you could spend hours trying to figure out when you're going to do things and how often in a week you're going to have Bible class and how often you're going to do science. If you just look at last year's schedule, that can save you hours of work in preparing. Talk to the previous teacher if you can. And if they don't have one, then you need to make one. Students like to see a schedule. They really do. I know one year I didn't prepare like I should have, and I didn't have the schedule ready on the first day of school. And the students asked me, where's the schedule? You know, they wanted to see that. They want it laminated on their desk so they can know what's happening. They like structure. They like that. And if the students that didn't even think they enjoyed school that much, right? They weren't academically successful. They weren't really high-scoring students academically. But it just gave them comfort to know what's happening. They want to know what's happening. So make sure you have that schedule made for them. Ask the school board for a school calendar. Do you have a school calendar for the school? Do you know when you're going to have Christmas vacation? Do you know when Thanksgiving vacation is? Do you know when you're supposed to give the report cards? When are the report cards supposed to be done? When's your program? Are you doing a spring program or a Christmas program? Or are you doing both? Or maybe an end-of-the-year program, too. Make sure you know that before so that you can plan for it. And if they don't have one, maybe you need to just make one. Sometimes you just have to do some of those things. It's very helpful to you and to the students. Number 8, main heading, prepare your records. One of those things to prepare is a grade book. Do you know where, you know, and that's, how are you going to record the grades? Are you going to be recording every day's work? Or are you just recording the tests and quizzes? Find that out. If you're recording every day's work, then you need to get a book to write those grades in every single day so that you can average them out and all the other stuff that you do with grades. B is the student permanent record. Each student should have a permanent record sheet where you write down, you know, throughout the year, you write down their grades. At the end of the year, you should have a grade average for that student in each subject showing what they did and how they did in that subject. And along with that, you need C is a file cabinet. Every school should have a file cabinet somewhere where those records are stored. So find that and use it. And even have, you should have a file cabinet for yourself in your own classroom. One thing that saved me a lot of time, the first few years I taught, I would give the light unit. Again, we used CLE, pretty much all of CLE the first year I taught. And so each time a student did a test, I would get out the new light unit and I would tear out the quizzes and tests and put them somewhere and then give them the light unit. Well, that took up time. Every time they had tests, I had to do that. And I figured out that it's a lot easier if you, at the beginning of the year, go through the books. And you have a big stack of books here. You can tear out their quizzes and tests, and it doesn't take that long. You stack them all, organize them all, pop them into a folder, into your file cabinet, and then whenever you're ready for those tests and quizzes, they're right there. You know exactly where they're at. Big time saver for me was to do that at the beginning of the year, especially oftentimes at the beginning of the year, you know, that week or two before school starts. Maybe you're not even sure what to do sometimes. That was me. I didn't know what to do sometimes. I was studying textbooks kind of just randomly, and I didn't really know what to do. That's one of the things you can do to help save you a lot of time. D is achievement test. Make sure you know, does your school do achievement tests every year, every other year? Are they ordered? Do you need to order them? If you order them at the beginning of the year, it's cheaper. I mean, seriously, they give discounts if you order them earlier versus if you order them in January and February. So order them early, and then they'll be there when you need them. It's hard to do some of those things when you're in the heat and you need it right now. Teachers probably use express two-day shipping more than anybody else does. All right, number 9, prepare your classroom. I don't think I need to spend a lot of time on this one. Most teachers, in my opinion, probably spend too much time on this one and skimp on some of the more important things. But sometimes, again, that's because we don't know what to do or exactly what we should be doing. In this book, The First Days of School, I highly recommend you read this. It's got all kinds of good stuff in it. It says, spend your time on classroom management of student procedures
rather than making your classroom look like a showcase. A few bare but clean bulletin boards, shelves, and flower pots won't disturb anyone. Do not overarrange or overdecorate your room for the opening of school. Your room should be neat and pleasant, but don't spend time making it the ultimate room you want by back-to-school night. We need to exercise, I'm not sure what the word is, discipline or restraint in this area, that we don't, so many times it's a contest, you know, which room can look the fanciest or look the neatest or, I don't know, it's good if it looks pleasant and clean, but don't spend the majority of your time on that. There's 4 points I'd like to make about that. First of all, make it meaningful. This is talking about decorations, how to prepare your classroom. Make it meaningful. Don't put things on the wall that are pointless, that don't have any purpose whatsoever. B, make it educational. Yes, we're trying to teach, right? Make it educational. Put up the charts about music. Put up charts about the math, the multiplication tables, things like that. Third one is make it stimulating. It should, when they look at it, it should make them think. Maybe it's a quote, something about serenity is the courage to accept the things, you know, something like that. And the last one is make it scriptural. People should walk into your classroom. They should see this is a Christian school. There should be Bible verses up there. Maybe have your Bible memory chart up there somewhere. Students love putting their sticker up after they say their Bible memory. It's just something, I don't know, I always did it in school and I always did it for my students. It's just something fulfilling to be able to do that. And even I've had students ready, they were gone that day, and I don't require them to say their Bible memory if they're not there, if they're sick or something. But I've already had students that came to me the next week and they wanted to say their Bible memory so they could put that sticker up to fill in there because someone else had more stickers than they did. And it's just, it's amazing. Make it scriptural. All right, the last one, number 10, is prepare to teach. And one good article to read in relation to this is Dear Second Year Teacher. It's by Carolyn Martin. It's on the docforlearning.org. It's a really good resource for other things as well. So if you have online access, go to the docforlearning.org and you can find all kinds of good articles there. This one is Dear Second Year Teacher by Carolyn Martin. All right, A, the first day is so very, very important. In this book, Wong, he says, what you do on the first days of school will determine your success or failure for the rest of the school year. What you do in the first days of school will determine your success or failure for the rest of the school year. It's really, really important. That's when your students are, they don't know what to expect from you. They've never had a teacher like you before. They don't know what to expect, and so they're looking, they're watching. Is this teacher going to be strict? Is he going to let us get by with stuff? Is he going to be interesting? I don't know what they're thinking, but they're looking, they're watching you. And if you can have your stuff ready and have your procedures and, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. So the first thing you should do in preparing the first day is write out a welcome speech, like for your devotions the first morning. You know what exactly you're going to say. Because I remember that first day of school, I walked into the classroom, and, after I was there, my students walked in. You know, the bell rang, 8:30, and it was time to start. And I had never in my life done this before. All of a sudden, you just kind of, you forget what to say. And your mind goes blank. You're very nervous. You know, if you write out something, maybe, to say, it'll help maybe make things go smoother. So write out a welcome speech, or even maybe write down an outline of what you're going to talk about the first morning. Maybe rules and procedures could be one of those. And the second thing is establish procedures and routines, and I'm sure Connor will give us more details on this tomorrow. You need to do that in the first days of school. That is the time to establish those things, not after the problems start arising. Then you don't. That's not the time to go back and start establishing guidelines and procedures. Do that right away. You know, just and as they come out. You know, what is the procedure? What are they supposed to do when they walk into your classroom? Do you know? So figure out what should they be doing. Should they go to their desk? Should they do something else? What should they say? Are you going to require them to say "Good morning, Mr. Derek" when they walk into your classroom or whatever your name is? Establish those right away, and it'll make it so much easier
Someone once compared that to, if you don't, you know, sometimes you have to cut off a dog's tail, right, for looks and things like that. When you establish all your procedures and guidelines at the beginning of the year, you're cutting off that one, that tail in one clean whack. It might be a little bit painful, but it, in the long run, it's not too bad. It heals over. If you do, if you add rules and procedures throughout the school year, you're just cutting off that tail an inch at a time. Very, very painful. Cut it all off at one time, and then you're done. And it could save you hours of time throughout the school year if you get that in the very first few days. B is the teacher planner. Do you have a teacher planner? New teachers should plan out at least the first 2 weeks. And I'm a stickler on this. I know some teachers have told me, well, they don't do this. But if you're a new teacher, plan out the first 2 weeks. And I mean like exactly what your students will be doing. It can be, it's not a set in concrete thing, but it gives you an idea, and it gives you a plan on what to do, exactly how you're going to do it. Make sure you assign enough work. Students come to school with boundless energy on the first day of school, and they get piles of work done. And you'll be scrambling for things for them to do if you aren't ready. Make sure you have, feed that enthusiasm so that it keeps on going throughout the school year. But be flexible, you know, be prepared to change things. But if you have it ready, it's a whole lot better to have something ready and not need to do it than not have it ready and then, what am I going to get for these students to do the first couple days? C is science supplies. Look through your science textbooks and order those. Look through and decide which experiments you're going to do. So there's lots of experiments in science textbooks, and you can't do them all. But look through them and say, oh, this looks neat. And go ahead and write that one down and figure out what all you need. And then you can make one order and get all your science experiments at one time and save thousands of dollars on express two-day shipping. The night that you want to do, I'm going to do an experiment tomorrow. And there are last-minute trips to Walmart at midnight. I've done those too. D is Bible memory. Have your Bible memory figured out. Now, this is a great time. You can do this even before you go to your school. Maybe some of you are traveling to a different community, like you said, and you can't. There's some things you can't do now, but you can figure out what are you going to memorize for Bible memory. Get that figured out, and even better, figure out. Go ahead and print off. You know, find a Bible program on your computer or something if you have one, and copy and paste it over to a document, and then separate it into four sections of four verses each or three verses each. And to figure it out exactly how many weeks do you have in the school year? See if you got 70 weeks. No, that's not right. 30 weeks of school, you still divide it in 30 sections. Or actually, you want to do maybe 26 sections because you want to save about 4 weeks for review and things like that, or weeks that you can't have it. So, yeah, if you have 34 weeks of school, don't plan 34 weeks of Bible memory. Save some weeks for review, and there's some weeks that you're not going to be able to do Bible memory. E is the Christmas Easter program. Be thinking about that. Especially if you want to sing some difficult songs, it works great to start practicing right away. One year we sang Let This Mind Be In You by Lyle Stutzman. And if any of you know that song, you know it's a hard song. And we didn't sing it perfectly, but we actually just sang it fairly, and we sang it through, you know, without anyone stopping, you know, without just stopping in the middle because of off-key singers or something. We made it through the whole song, and it was amazing how well it went. Again, because we started practicing like the first week of school, or second week of school. Extremely important. Motivational projects, F. Make sure, have those. I'm not going to say too much about those. Do projects that involve team effort and a team reward. Don't just do whoever gets the 98% gets this, because some students maybe can't do that. Do one that where all the students can participate. And if you plan some of those out at the beginning of the year, then it'll be a lot easier than when you need something like that to come up with that. G is extracurricular ideas like science fair, special days, pest hunt. We'll have to skip over some of that. There's nothing wrong with coming up with these ideas during the middle of the school year, but it's so often we become so immersed, especially that first year of school. We're so busy, we just don't have time for inspirational ideas. And so, if you do happen to think of that, you don't have any time to plan it. So if you can plan that ahead of time, then it makes it easier. Know your school culture. They might have things that they do already. Do they have a 100th day every year? If you know those things, you want to make sure you continue those traditions, unless it's something that needs to be changed. And then maybe you need to talk to the school board.
The last thing is daily lesson preparation. The first law of teaching is the teacher must know that which he would teach. I'd like to read a little bit from here. The very ignorance of his pupils often tempts the teacher to neglect all preparation and study. He thinks that at any rate he will know much more of the lesson than the children can, and counts that he will find something to say about it, or at least his ignorance will pass unnoticed. A sad mistake, and often costing dear. Some bright or studious pupil is almost sure to discover the cheat, and henceforth that teacher's credit with his class is gone. Don't be that teacher that neglects to prepare just because you think, well, I probably know more than the student does, or maybe I can figure it out as we go. Don't do that. Study the objectives. Every lesson has objectives at the beginning of the lesson. Study those objectives. Number two, plan the review. And with CLE, that's obviously built into the lesson. With Rod's staff, you need to do more of that yourself. Plan it out. What are you going to do for that? Number three, do it the day before. It's safer schedule-wise. You have a flat tire on the way to school, it'll be planned already. Or if you bring an iced coffee to school for your co-teachers and the iced coffee spills onto the floor and you're trying to pick it up, and meanwhile your truck creams off the road and you have a wreck, then you're ready for the day. That happened to me. You can bring things from home that you need for an experiment or something. And it gives it time for it to soak in as well. You can think about it, you know, throughout the night. When you wake up during the night, you can think about that lesson you're studying for the next day. Number four, do a few problems yourself. Don't just assume that you know how to do it. Work a few out. And number five, the last one is study the lesson until you are excited. I heard Jonah saying that recently. Study the lesson until you are excited. That's how you know you're ready, if you're excited about it. All right. Conclusion. Teaching is a skill that requires a lot of effort, planning, and preparation. Would you jump into 10 feet of water without any flotation device if you never swum before? Please don't jump into the classroom without preparing. But just like swimming, you can't learn how just by listening to topics. They help to prepare you, but there comes a time when you have to jump in. Even elephants can't or don't always keep their heads above water. Did you know that? They don't. They use their trunk like a snorkel, and they can breathe even while underwater. Prayer is our snorkel. It's our underwater breathing device. Even if you're in over your heads, you can still survive if you keep a strong connection to our Heavenly Father. And maybe you will discover, as I have, that teaching, like swimming underwater, can be a thrilling experience. And let's read your takeaway together. The three most important words to a painter, pilot, or chef are preparation, preparation, and preparation. The three most important words to a teacher are preparation, preparation, preparation. The good news, are you going to be proactive or reactive? Good news, you get to choose. You're dismissed.